You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Thursday episode, Nick Lee. If you're a new listener, thanks for giving our podcast a shot. Those who are regular listeners, as always, glad to have you on board. We got a jam-packed episode coming your way. Plenty of salary cap discussions, plus a look back at Colby Parkinson's rookie season and what to expect from the young tight end moving into 2021. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Everyone knows this is going to be a challenging offseason for NFL teams because of COVID-19. Every team's going to be dealing with substantially lower salary caps, no NFL combine, virtual meetings with players only, a new reality for a second straight year. But you can make the case it will be even tougher in some regards for John Schneider and the Seahawks. Hey, congratulations, you're extended through the draft in 2027, but your quarterback may potentially want out. You have very little cap space, and you have four draft picks. Right now, per overthecap.com, the team has an estimated $4.1 million in cap room. That's barely enough to cover a rookie class, let alone do anything in free agency. But really the point, Nick, that I think you and I both, we were talking about this before the show, what we really want to hammer home, when you consider how bad of a financial situation most of the teams in the NFL are in right now, especially teams like the Saints and the Eagles that truly are in salary cap hell, especially with their quarterback situations. The Seahawks are really in pretty darn good shape, and John Schneider has a lot of very simple ways that he can create up to $25, $30 million in cap space swiftly.
Yeah, there are certainly teams out there that are in a much they're in irons, to use a nautical term, you know, where you can't get your sails into the wind and you're kind of stuck there and you can't go anywhere. Looking at over the cap, I would say I don't have the exact number, but I'd say about a third of the teams in the NFL are actually in the red or will be in the red and have to make some moves happen to even just be above water. And like you mentioned, the Saints and the Eagles big time at Eagles almost 50 in the red and Saints almost 75 million in the red. And so the Seahawks are, as of now, about 4.9, according to over the cap, in the green. And yes, like you mentioned, with the rookie class, that's about it right there. And so when you're thinking about trying to create some cap space, you can get pretty creative and you can do it without losing some of your star players. And I think first, Corbin, we should go to those star players and not to trade them, not to cut them quite yet. But Russell Wilson, and especially Russell Wilson, but also Bobby Wagner. But for me, this is about Russell Wilson, especially with what's gone on this week. I'm going to be very clear. No, this isn't Madden. This is not simple math. There are reasons why these people are getting paid to do what they do, and you and I are not. It's a fluid situation. It's pretty complex. And Russell Wilson should literally put his money where his mouth is. He wants the team to be better. He wants better protection. Take a page out of Tom Brady's book and loosen up the books for more moves. Move some money around in his contract. Heck, take a pay cut. I don't know. Prove it. Convert some of that money into a signing bonus. And same might go for a guy like Bobby Wagner. So I think the simplest way, I guess, is to move the base salary money into a signing bonus. And that could create about $12 to $20 million in cap space doing that. It does backload the last few years of that deal, but then you could just readdress this again and you might have more flexibility by then. But I'd say, Corbin, that's probably the simplest solution, but maybe not from the player's point of view, but at least from a fans and executive point of view.
Well, the nice thing about this is the reason I have this atop our list for ways Seattle can create cap space. These are not pay cuts. These guys are getting the money up front. They're turning it into a signing bonus. So you're telling Russell Wilson and or Bobby Wagner, hey, we're just going to give you more money this year just up front. No player's ever going to complain about that. And it creates more cap space. Again, as you mentioned, it does backload things that it gives you larger dead cap hits in future seasons in the deal. But when you consider that we're hoping we're going to be out of this COVID-19 pandemic. At some point this year, we're going to be really making progress. And then next year, maybe things are going to be much closer to normal. The salary cap should start going back up once we get fans back in the stands and full stadiums and stuff. Maybe by this fall, we'll see how that goes. But I expect that you're going to see every stadium have at least some fans in it next fall. I expect that kind of progress. And so I would expect, again, every team's going to have more money to work with salary cap-wise in 2022 and beyond. Things start normalizing a little bit. So that would be the first thing that I would strongly consider, especially because you mentioned the amount of money we're talking about. Russell Wilson by himself, you can create up to $12 million in instant cap space. That's good enough to go get you a really good offensive lineman, potentially, for the 2021 season. And then you, for your second thing, you can extend a number of players the Seahawks have that have 1 year left in their contract. Some names that come to mind: Tyler Lockett, Dwayne Brown, Carlos Dunlap, Jaron Reed, Quandre Diggs. All those guys have 1 year left in their contracts. A number of them have huge cap hits. Carlos Dunlap and Jaron Reed, close to $14 million cap hits. Tyler Lockett in that $13 million range as well. Really, this functions like a restructured contract. The team has the ability to convert a player's existing base salary into a signing bonus and then spread that money out over the extension years that are added. So again, you're putting a little more burden financially on your team in later seasons, but that's what a lot of teams are going to have to do right now with the salary cap complications. And it gives you the ability to fill other needs on your roster with extra money that's created with these extensions.
Yeah, certainly these first two scenarios are the most team friendly and I guess to keep your players happy. I think this is the first two are more of the win-win, where the players still get to play in a Seahawks uniform and the Seahawks have a bit more money to spend elsewhere and build up that team that Russell Wilson so desperately wants. And the last few we'll discuss here aren't as positive or aren't as easy and does require a bit of just discomfort, I guess. And the third, that next one is trading. Obviously, the same guys that we just talked about for extending, you could also trade. A Jaron Reed, a Carlos Dunlap. And, you know, you'd hate to obviously lose any of these players because they're such great contributors to your team, especially a guy like Tyler Lockett, who is still arguably receiver number one, if not a 1A, 1B with Metcalf. And you'd hate to lose that, especially when you're trying to boost Russell Wilson's arsenal instead of deplete from it. And then, of course, you have a guy like Jamal Adams back there and Bobby Wagner, arguably the two best defenders on the Seahawks. They have been tossed around, I've seen, by fans as, why don't we trade Bobby Wagner? Why don't we trade Jamal Adams? And let me tell you one thing before, you know, Corbin's going to go off, but let me say one thing. Trading Adams and Bobby, you thought the defense was bad before? Wait until you trade your two best defensive players. And another thing is, whom do you get with the money you save from trading them? They better be better than Jamal Adams and future Hall of Famer Bobby Wagner to make it worth it.
Yeah, I can kind of understand arguments with Bobby Wagner. If you're getting a first round or early second round pick, I can, at least because of his age, I can understand there is that idea that you'd rather get rid of a player 1 year too early rather than wait too long, and then you can't get value back for them. So I understand that rationale, but he's coming off another first team all pro season. He's still an outstanding linebacker that I think's got a couple really good seasons left in a minimum. And Jamal Adams is 25 years old. He played with a bunch of injuries last year and was still a second team all pro selection. He broke the sack record for defensive backs. This team, his energy was just contagious. When he was on the field, everybody else lifted up their game. And you could see that in the second half of the season as he became more comfortable. So I don't understand the rationale there. You just gave up two first-round picks and a third-rounder for Jamal Adams. Why would you turn around? And you might be lucky just to get a first-round pick right now, given the circumstances. Teams just aren't going to be willing to give up those high picks. You wouldn't get anywhere close to the investment back that you gave up for him. They made that trade believing he was a long-term fixture in this defense. And I know there's plenty of people saying, well, look at the contract that's going to take to sign him. Jamal Adams is one of those unique unicorns in the National Football League that deserves that kind of money. And I feel like the Seahawks, they're going to have an even better idea how to deploy him next year. I think his coverage is going to be better just by being healthy. That's certainly going to impact his game as well. So I think those two, especially Adams, they need to be off the board. Stop talking about trading them. You have a defense that could be a championship caliber defense. after how they played in the second half last year. You don't give up your two best players. You just don't do it. I can understand Jaren Reed, even Dunlap. And maybe you could make the argument for Lockett even, with him having one more year in his deal and he's getting closer to 30 years old, if you got the right package back in return. But that's going to create another hole now you have to fill at the receiver position behind DK Metcalf. And so Reed and Dunlap seem like the two that would be most likely. You're not going to get a ton back in return probably, but those are the guys that seem like most likely if you're going to go that route. And the last thing they can do, and this is the one that typically, if I'm a GM, I try to avoid unless I absolutely have to do it, and that is a simple restructure. These deals can get ugly. Veterans don't want to be approached about them because typically this is much different than just turning a base salary into a signing bonus. We're talking about pay cuts and stuff like that. Veterans get angry when you approach them about this typically. There are exceptions where veterans will take small pay cuts so they can help the football team, but most guys don't want to do that. And so that's typically near the end of the line. That would be your last resort to try to open up cap space, but there certainly are options. It's feasible to open up as much as $30 million in cap space with just a few swift moves. And then you can sign a few of your own guys. You can go get a center or left guard in free agency, maybe add another receiver. You have options. So I do think they have a lot more flexibility than most teams, especially the ones that have a high-priced quarterback like the Seahawks do in Russell Wilson. We just got to see how John Schneider in the front office chooses to approach this offseason. Will it be similar to years past where they try to sign a bunch of mid-level free agents, or will they go make a few big splashes with Russell Wilson's comments maybe on the offensive line? We could see him do that. We'll just have to see how things unfold in what has already been a very crazy offseason, even though it's only 4 days old. Coming up next in the second quarter, it's time for Tinder Thursday, as we've done the last couple weeks. We're going to be looking at two offensive and two defensive impending free agents for the Seahawks, and we're going to decide whether we're going to swipe right to re-sign them or swipe left to let them walk in free agency. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Thursday show, my co-host Nick Lee. February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. Don't miss this week's episode featuring Candace Cooper of Locked On Tar Heels and Erica Ayala of Locked On Women's Basketball discussing the opportunities and challenges that come with being a Black woman in sports. There's a new episode coming next week, so go ahead and subscribe to the Locked On Presents podcast feed on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. Since we're officially in off-season mode, we really only have a little over a month until free agency starts, so things are going to really start heating up across the NFL. We're already starting to see some teams cutting some high-priced veterans. We saw A.J. Bouye get released by the Denver Broncos. I saw today the Oakland Raiders are expected to release one of their high-priced receivers, Tyrell Williams, did not play at all last season due to injury. So you're going to start seeing teams cutting the fat even more than they do in a normal season with the lowered salary cap. Let's talk prospective free agents for the Seahawks. It's Tinder Thursday. Those of you that have listened to the last couple times we've done this, it's simple. Just like the app, we have the opportunity to either swipe right and re-sign a player, or we can swipe left and let them walk. Nick, let's start on the offensive side of the football. Ethan Posick last year, his first chance to play center in the NFL after Justin Britt was released. He started 14 games in the regular season, 15 games total, but we have a very little
sample size as far as him playing the position. He finished the season on kind of a low note, did not play well in the playoff game. Do you think Ethan Posick should be brought back, or is it time to move on?
Well, boy, what a difference a year makes. Right off the bat, I'm going to swipe right. In dating terms, you come back to a girl you knew a while ago, and all of a sudden she's changed her look. Maybe she's done her hair different. Maybe she's taking care of herself more self-confident, working out a lot if you're into that. I don't know. I got to be careful here about not being shallow, but, all of a sudden she's your type. You know what I'm saying? And when she wasn't maybe a year ago. And that's kind of how I feel about Ethan Posick. We both were very ready to just cut him off and release him last year without really a second thought. Wouldn't have lost a second of sleep over it. But I think Posick, for the most part, played himself into a chance at least to come back and be the center of the future. He's only 25 years old, and he earned a higher approximate value than Mike Iupati or Brandon Schell along the offensive line. And he actually had four games this season of at least an 81 or better passing grade, which I know Russell Wilson's been tooting the horn about wanting to be protected. And in several games, Ethan Posick played very well in the pass protection department. But I understand, the wild card game actually was, I believe, his worst graded game of the season. And he had several lower grades when you're talking Pro Football Focus. So and there was a bit of a mixed bag there, but I think there's enough to where he won't be hugely expensive. We just got done talking about how, maybe the Seahawks can wiggle some money loose, but they won't be making splashes everywhere. They won't be throwing money every which way. And I think Ethan Posick is probably going to be more valued here than anywhere else. And there's that familiarity. And as long as the relationship between Posick and Russell Wilson are good, I'm not in the locker room. I don't know that. But if it's a good relationship, I think there's enough there. I think Posick did enough to merit a second chance and a second contract as the starting center, at least for next year.
So our listeners are going to think this is cheating, and really it is. I really wish there was a swipe middle button, like swipe down or something. And the reason that I'm saying that is I'm thinking about that meme where the guy is holding a girl's hand, but then he's turning around and looking at another girl. It's kind of that situation at the center position, because I'm okay with Ethan Posick as your starting center. He is a reliable guy. He was steady most of last season. But at the same time, I see Corey Linsley and David Andrews and even Alex Mack, the longtime starter for the Browns and the Falcons. Those three guys are available in free agency, and they are all significantly better than Ethan Posick is. And so, to me, it's kind of one of those wait-and-see type moments where you're like, I'm going to aim higher here, but if it fails, then I'll come back to you type thing and hope that Ethan Posick
rebound
is still
girl.
Available. He's a rebound center. Yeah, so that's the way that I view this. So if I have to pick between the two, I'm swiping left, but I'm keeping the door open, hoping that is there an option that maybe Ethan Posick shows up again on my Tinder if things don't work out with one of the other bigger name centers that I try to recruit and sign. Ethan Posick would be a nice fallback option because of his familiarity, and he played okay last year. I worry about him as a run blocker, that he's ever going to be anything more than just a pedestrian run blocker, and we know how much the Seahawks love to run the football. To me, that's the biggest issue I have with his game. Speaking of a guy that he helped block for, that leads to our next guy here. Carlos Hyde was signed late in free agency after the draft, actually. Last May, the Seahawks signed him to a one-year contract, and he had the second lowest rushing yardage total of his career. He missed six games with a variety of injuries. You saw flashes. He played really well in a few of the games. The Cardinals game in Week 11, he came in and had 79 rushing yards. They got a 50-something yard touchdown run against Washington from him. So you saw flashes of what he was capable of. He was consistent when he was healthy. The problem was he missed so many games, and there were games he was on the field that he just didn't get many snaps because he wasn't your starter. Chris Carson was. So this one is kind of complicated because he is an aging running back, but there are a lot of dominoes that could fall in the backfield here. So what do you think about Carlos Hyde?
Yeah, this one could be I don't know if people still do that where they update their relationship status on Facebook, and it's complicated. I remember people back in high school, I remember people doing that on their Facebook. And this is great. Valentine's Day weekend coming up here. This is a good theme. And for, and now we talked about, you specifically talked about maybe having a, Ethan Popsek as the rebound center. I'm swiping right here for Carlos Hyde and putting him in my back pocket as my rebound running back. And it kind of feels weird that I'm swiping right for Carlos Hyde when I swipe left for Chris Carson. But Chris, it's not you, it's me. You know, it's the salary cap, and Carlos Hyde is just a season removed, really, from a 1,000-yard campaign still in 2019. And let's play hypotheticals for a second. Rashad Penny's your number one running back in 2021. And if Carlos Hyde's back there playing second fiddle, Rashad Penny either gets hurt again or doesn't work out for another reason. Carlos Hyde's a pretty decent insurance policy, just, again, just 1 year removed from a 1,000-yard season. I'd imagine he'd be the cheapest running back available that ran for 1,000 yards in the last 2 years. And so 4.5 yards per carry during the season. And you mentioned that Cardinals game. He averaged 5.6 yards per carry with 14 carries in that game against the Thursday night game against the Cardinals. And he, at both Cardinals games, actually, he performed very well, averaged over 4.5 yards a carry in both those games. So, yeah, I'm a swipe right. And, you know, he might be a rebound, but, you know, he's a really good consolation prize if Carson doesn't work out and if Penny doesn't work out after Carson.
I'm going to swipe left, but I think that you make some very compelling arguments. If the Seahawks end up in a position where they don't draft a running back high and Carlos Hyde's still available, I think there's a chance that he might have to wait till late in free agency again to sign with somebody. Then you could make a move post-draft again. I think he enjoyed his time in Seattle. You could bring him back at a pretty affordable contract, and then I would consider doing it. But I actually am pretty confident in the backs the Seahawks have. I almost would rather bring back Alex Collins on a one-year deal around veterans minimum. I think that he would be a really good complement to Rashad Penny, and I think DJ Dallas has the potential to be a really solid number two running back too. And they, all three of those guys have slightly different skill sets too. And so I don't know if I'm excited about giving much money to a soon-to-be 31-year-old running back that I think still got some juice left in him, but I would rather invest my money elsewhere. So
it's not Eddie Lacy.
Well, if it was Eddie Lacy, I would be swiping left and we'd be on to the next player. I at least have to think about this one. But I'm going to swipe left just because I like the options they have, and I would rather spend that money on veterans maybe at another position group. Let's go to defense. Benson Mayoa had a really slow start to the season, just 2 sacks, I believe, in the first 6 or 7 games. He missed a few games with an ankle injury, and then he was another player. The arrival of Carlos Dunlap just brought out the best in him. He was fresher when he was on the field. He wasn't playing near as many snaps, and you could see the impact that had on him as a pass rusher, and he came to life. He was one of the highest-graded pass-rushing defensive ends in all of football the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season for Pro Football Focus. He was a quarterback pressure machine, had a bunch of sacks, had a key strip sack in one of those games. And so he really played himself potentially into another contract with the Seahawks. He's still only going to be 29 years old, really still in the prime of his career. I'm just going to be upfront, Nick. To me, this one's a no-brainer. I am swiping right. I think I can re-sign him at an affordable rate. I don't think anybody's going to be rushing to sign him for $6, $7, $8 million a year. I think you can get him back on a similar deal to the one you gave him last season. And especially if you move somebody like Jaron Reed or Dunlap, you're going to need somebody that can fill the gap rushing the passer. And I think Benson Mayoa has proven the last couple of years that he indeed is a very good pass rusher when he doesn't have to play 75-80% of the snap. So this to me is a no-brainer. I think he fits the system well. I like him at that Leo spot. He is a better run defender than advertised. I'm swiping right.
Well, you know, Corbin, this is a one that this might have been the hardest one for me. Looking at his snap numbers, and to use a baseball term, and I love doing that, he reminds me of those pitching prospects where you think they're going to be a starting pitcher and they're okay, and but maybe they get hurt or something happens and they turn into a reliever, and all of a sudden they become Andrew Miller. All of a sudden they become like this dominant closer. And I think that's what Mayoa is. He isn't that 90% of the snaps kind of defensive player. I think he's the, you know, 40s, low 50% defensive snap range is where his sweet spot is. And he comes in as a reliever, so to speak, and is a heck of a pass rusher. And you know what, Corbin, I'm going to be totally honest. I actually, at the start of our discussion, I was swiping left, but you made some compelling arguments that really I didn't think about. And I'm not going to be phony here. I'm going to actually swipe right. I'm not going to just stick with left because that's what I put. I'm actually going to swipe right with you. I kind of agree with that. My reasons for thinking about swiping left is the possible emergence of Daryl Taylor, and keeping Carlos Dunlap and Rasheem Green in there as well. But there's so many wild cards, and especially with possibly getting rid of one of Dunlap or Reed, I think that was the thing that really tipped it for me. And I think that bringing Mayoa back just gives a bit more of sense of security. And you can also bring Daryl Taylor on a little bit slower, because you just still don't know what you're going to get from him. The second round pick from last year, you'd hope he would just come out with his hair on fire with a year basically off with rehabbing, and he'll finally be healthy. But yeah, I'm convinced, Corbin. You've talked me into this. Maybe it'll be a blind date, and you talked me into this as a good idea, and all of a sudden we hit it off. I don't know.
Yeah, that's, you know what, you kind of almost did that with me on Carlos Hyde, but I wasn't quite ready to pull the trigger. Let's talk the last free agent here, Leno Hill, who only played in a handful of games in 2020. He was battling a back injury that ended up putting him on injured reserve, never was activated. And this is a guy that certainly could have gotten some snaps when Jamal Adams was banged up and he wasn't able to capitalize on it. And that's really been the story of Leno Hill's career. He has gotten opportunities, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. He's had a number of injuries, and he proved to be a very one-dimensional safety. You are not going to have him playing the deep third or even two deep safety. He has his coverage issues. He is a true box safety that is at his best covering tight ends. And with the addition of Jamal Adams and the emergence of Ryan Neal, who is a much better coverage guy in general, this one may have been the easiest one on my list as far as whether I'm going to swipe right or swipe left. I've seen enough. Maybe he'll have some success somewhere else, but Leno Hill, goodbye.
So, you know, that part at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy when Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, is like fleeing the scene on his ship. He's got the Infinity Stone. Well, it calls it the orb at the time. And he's amongst all this commotion. You know, he's being chased and being shot at. And all of a sudden, a girl wearing his shirt pops up out of nowhere on his ship. And he turns to her and goes, "I'm going to be honest. I forgot you were here." That's how I feel with Leno Hill. I forgot he was still part of the Seahawks. I'm not trying to like disrespect him as a person, but I completely forgot about him. And so, yeah, I'm swiping left. He kind of lost himself in the shuffle with, unfortunately, we talk all the time. The best ability is availability. And consistently, Leno Hill has not been available. We got Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, like you mentioned. Ryan Neal is a great point. And Ugo Amadi. I mean, the list goes on. Marquise Blair hopefully will come back healthy. You don't need Leno Hill anymore, and he's proven to be unreliable and one-dimensional, and yeah, I think it's a pretty easy swipe left. Sorry, Leno, good luck elsewhere.
I think you'll get an opportunity with another team because he's a physically imposing safety. Like I said, if a team's looking for somebody that can come out and help against the run and can defend tight ends, I thought he had some good games against George Kittle earlier in his career, but he just doesn't do enough well to really be an impact player. He made some mistakes on special teams, and he's had a bunch of injury issues. So this one was a pretty easy one for me. Again, like you said, best of luck to him in the future. I just don't expect to see him back with the Seahawks. We come back in the third quarter. We are going to flip the script to our rookie spotlight. This week, our second fourth rounder will cover tight end Colby Parkinson, looking back at his injury-shortened season and what to expect from him going into the 2021 campaign. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Football season may be over, but plenty of great sports action is coming soon with the NBA season underway, March Madness on tap, and Major League Baseball closing in on spring training. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Thursday podcast, Nick Lee. Thursdays on Locked On NFL are a must-listen as Ryan Tracy and Jake Liskow break down teams across the NFL from an analytics and team-building perspective. Get the expert analysis on your favorite teams from Ryan and Jake every Thursday. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts. As we've been doing throughout the offseason so far, we've been doing one a week. It's our rookie spotlight. We are now to the second half of Seattle's draft class, their second fourth round selection. They first picked DJ Dallas out of Miami. The second draft choice they made in the fourth round, they went back to the tight end position, which at the time kind of surprised some people because they had just signed Greg Olsen. They had given a restricted free agent tender to Jacob Hollister. They had Luke Wilson coming back, and they also had Will Disley returning from injury. But they drafted Colby Parkinson out of Stanford, 6'7", a little under 260 pounds, ran a 4.77 40-yard dash. So pretty good wheels for a man of his height and his size, and really soft hands in the college game. No drops during his final season with the Cardinal. Very reliable receiver despite having poor quarterback play for most of his time at Stanford. You and I both had fairly high expectations. He actually was my sleeper pick after the Seahawks drafted him. My sleeper to be maybe the best draft pick for the Seahawks in this class. I expected that he was going to have a chance to make an impact right away in the red zone. And then, unfortunately, he cracked his foot in an off-season workout while running routes, had to have surgery, and he wasn't actually back practicing until the middle of the season. He was on the non-football injury list all of training camp and the first 6 weeks of the season. We didn't really get to see much of him, but this is still a player that I have very high expectations for, especially with Shane Waldron coming to town.
Yeah, that last point, that is the key, I think. He was non-existent until November, was his first time taking snaps in an NFL game, and caught his first two passes in that Jets game when everyone was catching passes and everyone was playing because it was 40-3. That was his first passes caught on December 13th. So, yeah, it took him a while to really get hit going. And I'm not quite sure he ever really got his sea legs. 51 offensive snaps, 47 special team snaps over the whole season, two catches for 16 yards. But I think the point you made with Shane Waldron, I think, is huge. The dude is 6'7". He's fleet of foot for 6'7", pretty good hands. That just oozes a weapon that Shane Waldron and that Rams offense would use. And I think, especially if Waldron truly does mirror kind of some of the concepts that the Rams use, the double tight ends, I think that the Gerald Everett, Tyler Higbee, those kind of tight ends for LA, I think I could see a scenario where Colby Parkinson makes a pretty big impact in 2021 being utilized that way. And I'm really excited for him to have a full offseason healthy. Hopefully he doesn't crack any more bones and he actually is available to be used week one, because I think Shane Waldron can draw up some things that really display Parkinson's strengths.
And I was so surprised all of the 2020 season, because we've typically seen Russell Wilson take advantage of the tight ends that he had. Will Disley, before his injuries his first 2 years, was playing at a Pro Bowl level. You could even argue he was playing at an all-pro level the first six games before he got hurt in 2019. And he was one of Russell Wilson's favorite targets. And yet this year, the chemistry he showed with Greg Olsen in training camp never formulated to the regular season. Those two just weren't able to connect very often. Then Olsen gets hurt. Hollister's numbers went down. Wilson missed him some in the second half on opportunities, but he didn't put up the numbers he did the year before. Will Disley was healthy all 16 games, but his numbers were underwhelming as a receiver. Didn't get a lot of opportunities. Luke Wilson played in like a couple of games, and Parkinson only had two catches the entire year. Was not a big part of their rotation either. So it was kind of a bizarre season. I think when you look at Parkinson specifically, obviously when you miss the first half of season, your rookie year, you're completely behind the eight ball. And the fact he was even able to get any reps and was able to produce a little bit, to me, was a big deal. He didn't get a lot of opportunities, but you at least could see some of the physical traits that we thought we were going to see on the field in the few games that he did get some snaps. That Jets came, he was catching passes from Geno Smith, and he looked pretty good. He actually was wide open in the end zone early in that game, and Russell Wilson missed him, but he ended up finding Freddie Swain, the other rookie that was on the field at the time, for a touchdown. But you could actually, there's a mic'd up that you can hear Pete Carroll going, tight end's open, and he didn't throw the ball. So you saw some things on the field that were encouraging and very limited action. And going back to Waldron's offense, you mentioned a lot of the two tight end sets in Sean McVay's offense. They love 11 and 12 personnel. They like to run it from under center. They like to have tight ends that are interchangeable, that can block from inline positions, they can motion out to the slot. I still think Colby Parkinson can become that kind of a tight end. He was not a great blocker at the college level, but he came to Stanford basically as a really tall receiver, and then they added weight to him during his time in college. So he's still growing into that 6'7" frame, and there was never a question of his effort. I think he's got the ceiling to be a quality, serviceable inline blocker to go with being a weapon with soft hands that Russell Wilson should be very comfortable throwing the football to. That's why I was disappointed we didn't get to see him the first half of the season and really have an opportunity for Russell Wilson to hit it off with him. But that 6'7" target, especially in the red zone, down the seam, you've got to think Shane Waldron, one of the first things he's going to be trying to get done as the new offensive coordinator is find ways to get those tight ends involved more in the passing game, much more than they were last year. And I anticipate Parkinson might be the one guy in that group that he is the most excited about, given his size, those hands that I mentioned, and the athleticism that he has to go with that size.
Yeah, the physical traits are there for sure. And if anyone is going to magnify those strengths and his abilities, it's going to be the Rams offense and what Waldron can bring to the table, bringing some of those McVay concepts. And I don't think Russell Wilson also will complain about having a 6'7" target on the field. And especially once he gets more used to the NFL speed and kind of can find those windows, especially as a tight end where you can see those matchups that you like, especially when you're 6'7". And especially in the red zone, I think that they're going to find opportunities for him to score some touchdowns this year. I'm expecting, I wouldn't put it past him. I know Will Disley's probably still the number one tight end, and maybe you bring Hollister back. But I wouldn't be surprised to get, 400 or 500 yards out of Parkinson with 3, 4, 5 touchdowns. I think that's a pretty good he has a pretty good opportunity here in 2021.
That would be a huge leap considering the little that he played last season. But again, I thought after the draft, that was the pick that jumped out to me. Like, if the Seahawks capitalize on his skill set and his size and Russell Wilson targets tight ends like he has in past seasons, that ended up not being the case. But if he did do that, I thought that Parkinson was going to be potentially the biggest sleeper from that draft class in year one. And I still think he has that kind of upside to be a big-time impact player at that position. He's got an offensive scheme coming in that, even if Waldron only brings some wrinkles from Sean McVay's offense, I expect tight ends to be a bigger focal point in the passing game. And I think Parkinson fits what they're looking for at the position. So he's going to have a great opportunity to really build off the little bit of experience that he was able to get in an injury-shortened rookie season and potentially be your number one guy next year. I still would think Will Disley's the number one tight end when the season starts, and maybe Gerald Everett's going to come to town, as you and I have talked about on previous episodes. That would throw a wrench into this too. But I think Parkinson's got a real good shot at some point in 2020 of jumping to the top of the depth chart and becoming one of Russell Wilson's favorite weapons. If that happens, that's going to be a major development for this offense in 2021. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Blue Friday episode, in a Valentine's Day themed episode, I'm going to be looking at 5 free agency and 5 NFL draft crushes of mine going into the 2021 offseason. Looking forward to sharing my thoughts on both of those groups heading into Valentine's weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.